Good evening and welcome to Fighting Crime. This is our fifth episode here live on Hot 95.3 FM and of course VOB 92.9 FM as well. I'm your host Scholar Rock and I have today in studio with me my co-host Tahir Bulbulia, and we have some special guests lined up for you as well. As part of the Fighting Crime conversation in our first week, we featured Professor Dwayne Devenish of the University of the West Indies and criminologist Kim Ramsey throughout the series, and this evening you will hear the voices of certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. Our guest in the first week, Shamar Bernard, who spoke about his reintegration into society following a prison sentence and wanting to further contribute to the discussion, took to the streets for some of these views. Our inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence, rather within the broader context of the topic at hand, fighting crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence. We hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. The content in such instances may be inappropriate for children, and parental guidance is advised.
Yes, this is Shamar Bernard of the panel group talking about the crime and violence in Barbados, the raise in the crime and violence in Barbados. I'm here with a young entrepreneur that want to give his view and take on the height in the crime and the violence in Barbados. Both me and he know that he is an individual that could have chosen the crime site, but he chose to waver to the other side. So at this moment, we were asking him, how was your upbringing as a young man coming up?
Yeah, Brother Shamar. Right. Upbringing basically coming from a place like Lake Ridge Village, it was a rough upbringing. I won't necessarily say it was all bad, but in the ideal settings for how a family is supposed to function, you know, mother, father, and happy family, and that kind of thing, it wasn't that for me. Basically, I got raised by my mother, a single mother, you know what I mean? It was roughly about 7 or 8 that, you know what I mean, she alone had to deal with, you understand? So basically, my upbringing, you know, it wasn't all the bad, but it wasn't no bed of roses in terms of, you know, sometimes opportunities and them kind of things, you know, because, you know, the old girl working for minimum wage all these years and struggling to pay bills and feed we and make we right it, you know, it always is a struggle. So, you know, sometimes some of my interests, you know, might have been a little expensive. For instance, when I was much younger, you know what I mean, so I said I want to be a zoologist, you know what I mean, like animals, them type of things. But, you know, at the time, you know, certain things, I even remember times like, you know, you walk up on a little tour and thing and mommy pocketing that strong, you know what I mean? Okay. Them kind of things, you know?
Okay, so you would openly say that poverty had a major factor to play in upbringing in the urge to you getting out there and becoming an entrepreneur and looking for a dollar?
Yes, to be honest, yes. The whole hardships, right, and this is something that I observed too, right, the whole hardships of life, it play a dual purpose in my life, both good and bad, you understand? Because, all right, first thing first, start coming from the environment that I live in, one of the most densely populated places in Barbados, first thing first, Lake Ridge Village.
For sure.
And also, too, it is a place that, as we know, it's rough, you know? But we come up and we get exposed to, you know, some of the older heads doing all kinds of things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. From, you know, dabbling with crime into midway, into more serious things, you understand? So growing in the circumstances like this here, minus having a real strong like father figure or anybody so to really like, you know, take a young man and lift you up by bootstraps and let you know, well, this or not that, some sort of guidance. Minus that, the streets become my father.
Right. So what in the streets, what you would say urge you to become an entrepreneur rather than to become a criminal?
Well,
are a part of the criminal element that was in your neighborhood?
Well, basically, I would consider myself blessed to having a mind of my own. And as the Messiah, experience is the best teacher. Dabbling with crime, involving myself with crime, you know what I mean? And getting into certain things, living vicariously through other people and seeing what's going on around me, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, you, my brother, you know what I mean? Yeah. Similar to, like, you scenario, these are things I've been seeing from a teenager. So it's like, it got to a stage in my life where I had to, like, hurt myself, especially when I became a father. Especially when I became a father. And knowing that I gotta live for somebody else outside of myself, that's what really made me sit down back on myself and say, you know what, Dan? Here we're going on. Gonna get an application from the Polytechnic. Gonna learn the skill.
So how you feel about the height in crime and violence right now in our country, Barbados?
Well, to be dead honest with you, a lot of quote unquote society does be crying out about this violence. But to me, in essence, we don't be attacking the core of the violence, because my story that I'm giving you, it is not a loner story. This is a story that you could pass through plenty of ghetto to Barbados, and you're going to hear similar stories or even worse. You understand? Sure. Whereas that got young men, you understand, with no guidance, say, well, like, you know, for trade, you understand, it's the streets that I'm doing. You understand?
For sure.
So, to me, one is opportunities. Two, guidance. Serious guidance. I mean relatable guidance too, because in my opinion, it's hard for people that are out there in society who come all the fancy ideas and never walk the walk that we walk on, nothing, so can't relate to nothing that we talking about. You understand? Mm-hmm. Coming and directing things that we. What we need to do, in my opinion, part of the things, and just my opinion, see serious people within these districts that care, that pass through it, that walk the walk, not just talk it, you understand, to work with these youth. And also, for the bigger people within the society that got the resources and the capital, you understand, to work with these people that working with these youth, you understand. I mean, for me, this thing, it goes so deep, because we gotta always look at the root situation. Because we just tend, in my opinion, to stress a lot about the issue, the problem, and harp on the problem. We never check the source nor the solution.
You were listening to an interview with one of our previous panelists, Shamar Bernard, who took to the streets and spoke to certain individuals who have volunteered to share their personal experiences from the perspective of knowing what goes on in the world of crime and violence. We want to emphasize that the inclusion of these voices is not intended to glorify a lifestyle or acts of crime and violence. Rather, within the broader context of the topic at hand, fighting crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence, we hope that hearing varying perspectives will further assist in understanding the issues and discussing meaningful solutions. Once again, good night and welcome to the show. Tahir, what's going on?
Good evening, Scott. Good evening, Barbados. How you doing, man?
I am cool. It's been a little while.
It's true. It's been a while. We haven't been hiking for a while either.
Yeah. What's going on with you and Al? What do you have lined up for us today?
We have a big lineup tonight, and it's going to be quick pace. We're going to do it a little different tonight. Mm-hmm. We have an esteemed panel, but we're going to be taking your calls from the public. We want to be a lot more engaging tonight. We want to hear from you, your solutions. Mm-hmm. But on the panel tonight, we have one lady, a very, very special lady, Kimberly Gittins, who is an Olympian boxer. And she has an amazing story to tell on her journey in boxing. And we have Kiffin Barker, who's an entrepreneur, a young entrepreneur. And we have Mr. Shane Archer, who's a young man in the community, a prominent young man in the community. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be fairly quick pace tonight, but we want it to be solutions. As we always say, solutions.
All right. So as Tahir said, we want to hear from you. The numbers are 266-4862. That's WhatsApp. Please message. Don't call. 266-4862. If you want to call, you can do so at 434-1790. All right, Tahir, kick it off.
Yeah, so we're going to do ladies first. Kimberly, we're going to jump straight to you. How are you doing? Good night.
Good night, all. Thanks for having me. I hope my audio is well.
Yes, we can hear you loud nice and clear. And
okay.
Kimberly, tell us your story. What got you into boxing? I know your time is limited with us tonight. What got you into boxing and tell us a bit about your story.
What got me into boxing? It's a very interesting story. Not really interesting. It's very boring, to be honest. I was just encouraged to go to the gym every day. My coach my coach had just kept encouraging me at that point of time to, you know, to keep coming back, keep busy, because I was never interested in sports, to be honest. I only picked up the sport of boxing in fifth form in 2008 on my way out of school. So he's like, I like what I see. And, you know, he saw the talent. I guess he saw that maybe I would be destined for great things. And he kept really and truly pushing me and encouraging me to just keep at it. And I owe everything to him now with respect to boxing, because it has really done wonders for me, for young women, young children. I've worked with so many young people, Special Olympics, BDF cadets, all types of people that even look, even fellow boxers who listen to my story and say, hey, you, how you get here? And I'm like, yeah, well, I'm in the military, and they support me in everything I do. And they, you know, all the twinkle eyes start up. They don't believe that, you know, even with a small nation, that we get so much support for people who are really interested in doing something and being someone as a youth. So that's about it.
Yeah, Kimberly, and that's truly good. But I wanted you to set that tone. So in terms of crime and violence, we all know the situations and the stories around crime. But boxing in particular, and this is why I brought you on to the show, boxing in particular is usually associated aggression and fighting. And a lot of young people can fight good, you know? You see them fighting on the streets and things. So what advice would you offer our young persons out there that are fighting good, but to get into the sport of boxing, man? Give us that story before you move off. I know you have limited time with us.
Well, to be honest, when I first started boxing, I'm like, hey, I'm black and I'm from the Caribbean and I know how to fight. That was the same thing I had in my mind until I really started getting into the nitty-gritty of the sport and realized it's just so much more skill, technique, determination, and everything. But to me, boxing or even combat sports in general, it really just enlightens you to a level of discipline that even it really grounds you. Everyone thinks that, well, you know, there are different ends of the spectrum, but most people that I have met, they have really turned from being like an aggressive person for what people would see us to be as fighters. And it really just grounded a lot of people. We are the most like calm and passive people, I guess, to you upstarters. You know, it's just a unique correlation between the combat sports and you know, just quote unquote fighting and being aggressive. But for the youth, I would really encourage them to find a purpose. I feel like a lot of people are very lost, and there's fear and uncertainty, and they don't know where to go, where to turn. I've been listening to, you know, the opening of this program, and the young gentleman is right. Without proper or heavy guidance, I mean heavy guidance from all around, you're more likely to be lost. Like, I remember times when children were not allowed to be unblocked. You know, children had to do children things. Black men would send them home, you know, send them from there, let them go climb a tree or something. Mm-hmm. But now we don't have that. Even there, we don't have that level of guidance. And that's where I feel like society is going wrong. And where these children are heading is because maybe they don't even feel accepted, you know, by society, by their families. And when they go on the blocks and go on the road, that's who they cling to, because, you know, that's the only one that is accepting them for who they are. But if we don't get to these quote unquote blocks and, you know, tell them, hey, like, we're losing our youth to death and crime and jail and everything, there's so much more that you can be, even through sports. Sports is a multi-billion dollar industry that we can use, and we just don't recognize it. But, you know, these are things that we can do and encourage our youth. So for me, my standpoint is get the youth active and engaged through what I know best, and that's sports.
All right. I just wanted to ask you one quick question before you go, Kimberly. Would you say that getting into the discipline of boxing changed your life path?
It did tremendously. I really did not even see myself as a boxer. I really did not. But as I say, it really truly grounded me. made me realize there's so much more that I can offer, because it was a really unique situation being in a male dominated sport. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no females here. And I really wanted to be the best of the best. I wanted to change that. I wanted to encourage people, like, not to fear the sport. I really wanted to change the outlook. They look at a lot of boxers as, you know, very negative. You know, they all look rough. They you know, poverty, or they're not educated. And I didn't like that look that boxing had at that point in time. And I really just stuck in it to change it on real.
Right. So boxing gave you something to aspire to.
It really did.
All right.
It cool. really did.
Yeah, become the face of boxing in Barbados as well. So Kimberly,
I have.
Yes, indeed. Really, and as a female, crazy. It's good. So thank you for coming on. I know you have to run now, but thank you for giving us that 10 minutes.
Sorry, guys. I have to go because I'm still living the Olympic dream, and mm-hmm. my coach will really kill me. Lovely.
All the very best, Kimberly. So we'll get some youth into boxing after this show tonight, but thank you for coming on. So now at this point, we'll jump straight to Shane. Shane, what's your assessment of the crime situation in Barbados currently?
Hey, good night, host, and good night to the guests, and good night to Barbados. Now, first of all, in order to decrease the crime situation in Barbados or to have crime solutions, we need to attack crime and attack it at the core, like the young gentleman said. Now, doing so, we must attack the depressed communities and creating opportunities and creating activities, especially in these communities, because we see a situation in Barbados where a lot of our youth are going down the wrong path in some of these communities. So that once we create opportunities, especially jobs, we can see an increase in young men not being on the block, and young men doing something productive with their lives. And another thing that I believe that we could do is attacking the educational system. Now, Tahir Mayu went to school around the same time, and we realized that a lot of persons usually get sent home or get kicked out of school before the age of 16, and that should never be so in Barbados, because when a person gets kicked out of school at 16, what is their next objective? What are they going to do next in life? And I believe that we must create a situation in Barbados where we can have counseling rather than sending home students. Rather than kicking out students in schools, we also need to have more counseling and guide our young men, especially in the path of, I know everyone does not want to go down the educational route in terms of having a bachelor's or associate degree or anything of that sort, but we must create opportunities and create situations where our young men can go and learn trades such as electricians, plumbing. There's so many different trades out there in the world, and we often hear the Prime Minister speak about global citizens. And these things are not limited to Barbados. We must create citizens so that our young men could go throughout the world and show off their skills. And when we speak about teachers are extremely fundamental in the formation of certain behaviors. And I believe that this means that teachers have a fundamental role to play in the upbringing of children and students as well. So that we must also pay homage to our teachers. I know a lot of them do the best job, but oftentimes there are certain teachers who do not create the space that young men especially would like to be in. So there's a whole host of elements that we have to look to solve the crime situation. No amount of legislation will ever deter crime in Barbados. It may deter it a little bit, but it's like when your mother or father tell you come in off the road from riding a bicycle as a youngster and they're in the bedroom or they're gonna watch this or something, you know, ease back outside. So like no more legislation is only the reaction, and we have to stop being reactionary and create situations where we can be preventative for crime. And another thing that I wanted to speak on was prison reform. And a lot of times, persons who go to prison are not so good with language, and a lot of them can't read or write. And we need to create situations in prison where people come out of jail, they should be able to read and write before they leave. We should not be worse off when you come out than when you went into jail. A lot of criminals cannot read and write, and we need to create situations in prison and in the jail so that, you know, that the inmates can have opportunities to learn how to read, how to write, how to do certain skills, and not just be laying down all day, you know. So that is my assessment of it, as well as, you know, one more important thing that I must say is that fathers in Barbados have an important role to play. And if fathers do not step up to the plate, this situation will always be going on generation after generation. And we hope that this generation that we are in now, Tahir, can bring an end to a lot of worthless fathers, as Bajans would say. And to have more fathers stepping up to the plate and doing their job, you know. And that is my current assessment.
Very interesting point, Shane, for real. Solid. Let me trail these numbers once more before we go a little further in the conversation. 266-4862, if you want to hit us up on WhatsApp. Big ups to everybody listening on Hot. I know y'all are custom messaging Hot's WhatsApp, but hit us up tonight on 266-4862. And if you want to call, you can do so at 434-1790.
Yeah, Shane touched on some very, very important points there. And he made mention that when a situation happens in our schools, for instance, mm-hmm. say a young man or a young girl gets into a fight, they get suspended or they get internal suspension where they sit down outside the principal's office for the whole day, mm-hmm. or they get community service. Mm-hmm. I think that trend and that system has to change now. That has to change completely.
But what would you do? How can you change it?
But Shane spoke on the counseling and the social work and stuff like that, where mm-hmm. we can counsel our students and understand why they may be fighting, why they may be going through these situations, and have rehabilitation programs for them within the schools when they have students like that. Perhaps that could be a solution. But we go over to Kiffin now. What's your thoughts on that, man, on the reforming schools? Because we all know when we get in a fight at school or something, a student is put now to sit down outside the principal office. But where is the solution? Where is the solving of the problem or the stopping of it from the secondary school? Because I read a story the other day, mm-hmm. where it said that a lot of the students who are troublesome in school then go on to become criminals as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a trend there. So Kevin, what's your thoughts on that, man?
Good night, Barbados. My thoughts on that, as I told you in the hallway, I don't believe that kids should be finishing school at 16. Mm-hmm. That's just my point on it. I really think that kids should go at least the age of 18. 16 years old, you're trying to find your way, you know. There's a lot more, as you said, that can be done instead of the sending home, because I think we're sending home, parents might not be at home, no one to supervise, you know, and that could lead to more trouble. So as you say, you could find some programs within, like after school, probably, you know, helping cleaning around, tidying up classrooms, you know, that sort of stuff. Not that you have them to be like maids or whatever, but let them understand. Give them something to let them understand that what they are doing is not correct, right? So if you can find some programs, you know, cadets was once upon a time a thing that
Kimberly spoke on sports as well.
Right, as sports, you know, let them get out some of that anger. Was playing sports, you know, could be football, could be cricket, you know.
But some people would argue, right, that all these things have always been available. It's just that people don't really like gravitate towards them. They just don't take advantage of the opportunities there.
Scott, you think a good enough effort is made to put these things out there?
I don't know, but I do know that in some instances, it comes back to the same thing Shamar has been talking about since week one, which is poverty. Because like me, for instance, I wanted to join cadets so bad, but mommy couldn't afford it. I couldn't get that uniform and stuff, so therefore, you can't be a cadet. You understand what I mean? So, but continue.
Well, Scott, I'm going to draw one reference. There was a guy, Miguel Cummins, who plays cricket for the West Indies. He played for Barbados. Mm-hmm. I can remember Miguel starting cricket through me, basically, for a farm. I said, well, if you could run so fast, you should make a good fast ball. And I encouraged him, and he went on to play at the highest level, which is the West Indies, for the West Indies. So sometimes a fella
from a community not associated with global citizens, as Shane spoke about, correct?
Correct. So sometimes a fella is just need that encouragement, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he got the talent, but he frightened or scared to go forward because, as you say, he don't have anyone to give him a pair of shoes, you know. But as I said, fundraising events can be held to assist with these purposes. You know, you could host some fundraising events. I know COVID right now is in the midst of things, but eventually if COVID does come to an end, you can do lots more stuff where you can keep fundraisers and, you know, use that money to help these kids in terms, especially where you see them have talent, like cricket, get them some cricket gear, football, you could get them some football shoes. So things can be done, but I think a lot of persons believe that as soon as a child is given trouble, to just actually give up. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the basic problems I think that we are having in Barbados. Oh, he's troublesome. Oh, she's troublesome. But nobody, as you said, Tahir, nobody wants to sit down, find out, get to the root of these problems. What is causing these kids to behave in the way that they are behaving? Something might be causing them. They may be lack of funds at home, you know, parents. Kids really need love. Kids are persons that need love. You need to show kids love.
And I feel sometimes kiffing people try and then they're like, you know what? I don't know what to do with Tahir. Let me just put he also in my office to sit down because he's disrupting everybody else.
But that's what the person in the interview said. A lot of youngsters out there need guidance. A lot of people out there on the whole need guidance from the family. And Shane touched on it. The fathers, the parents. I think a lot of people need guidance. And how are these stories to be told? But I think we have a call on the line.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Hi, good night.
Hi, good night. My name is Wendy. So basically, I agree with everyone that made a comment. My contribution is very essential. I think we deal with the source, but we're not really going forward with the true solution. We've acknowledged that poverty is responsible. We've acknowledged that these children need guidance and counseling. But let us look at, like, literacy, political shifts in our community. When certain parties go, certain communities' activities disappear. We need to enforce, there should be legislation that community activism is essential, and we need to focus at the point that children as young as 5, because we have programs for our youth, but do we really have programs that cater to the communities that are in need from the time they are like 5? They need programs to show them that there is more to life, because the representation in their community may be the eyes of crime and the glorification. Because we also have to acknowledge that, again, the guy said it, wages for his mom were low. Our wages and our salaries may not be attractive enough, because we can make what his mother may make in a month, he can make in 2 days. So we all need to consider these points as serious factors that is really contributing to crime. I think that if we don't focus on functional literacy, we will always have a problem, because we could create skills for the boys to go and do, or the girls, but if they can't read the skill that they're in, we have gone nowhere. We haven't achieved anything. Functional skills in hairdressing, you got to know the product, because suppose you put it in a straightener and you can't read this particular word, and you gone and do damage. You damaged your client's hair. So functional skills in literacy is essential for our community as well. And all of these programs need to be done in these communities. It's okay to say opportunities exist and education is free, but everybody does not have the same opportunity, and we just discussed that certain people don't have access. I know someone that's a great footballer, and because their mother couldn't afford to buy football shoes for them, they were never able to achieve that dream. So we have to understand that putting legislation in place to ensure community activity stays, not when political shifts happen or somebody says, okay, well, I don't have enough funding to carry it on. And we ourselves, we must create a responsibility for ourselves to ensure that we go back to our community. There's a brain drain in our community. We get through and we never go back. And we must decide that I gotta go back. And that's the only way things will get better. So big brother programs, big sister programs, you know, creating a sisterhood, a brotherhood. I also believe that
Wendy, before you move on, I just want Shane to respond, because I think you made a very important point on political shifts. And Shane is involved in the community, especially he's done political science at the university. Shane, just respond to what Wendy was saying. I think that's a very important point, because sustainability within our communities is very important. Shane.
Yeah, I share the same views as Wendy. I don't think that crime should be politicized, because community should be politicized or anything like that. Because, you know, regardless of B in or D in crime and community development will always happen. And it must not only be a situation where government is tackling crime in Barbados, the private sector must be involved in this battle with us, because the private sector makes billions of dollars each year. We see all the companies making lots of money. And some of that needs to be invested back into these depressed communities and depressed areas so that we can solve the crime situation. And like what Kimberly said and what Wendy also noted as well, they spoke about sports. And you know, sports is a $1 billion industry. And we oftentimes do not take sports seriously. I don't even think every takes cricket seriously at times, you know. And that is that's supposed to be our sport. So I think that we need to take some of the other things seriously, especially sports, because we see oftentimes men make it from nothing to something in sports. And if we could help some of our persons, and like, I think they spoke with Miguel Cummins, you know, and he came from Nelson Street. If we could, and I'm sure that when he makes it, and when he makes it bigger, he will start to give it back to this community. So we need to start going to these communities, both the government and the private sector. It should never be politicized, because crime will always happen regardless of if B is in or D is in.
Right. So what sort of developments would you like to see in sports? Both to Shane and, is it Wendy on the line?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. In the community, what sort of activities would you love to see happening to help solve the problem that we have right now?
Well, currently, technology is very big. Animation makes a lot of money overseas. And animation isn't really take. I don't know for you guys, if you guys know, but a lot of people don't take it seriously. There are many young children that are glued onto the tablet. They can see the importance of animation. We could look at areas of dance, music, football, karate. There are those activities, they're curricular, extracurricular activities, but you have to pay for it. There should be, as again I said, there should be legislation, a way to get funding, that there are a lot of children that are so talented and they cannot afford to go. The Olympic team, we have people that can run here. And imagine, we have such a small team. We could have a bigger team for the next Olympics. We need to focus on other areas other than academics solely.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you so much, Wendy. I think we have another caller on the line. I don't know if Wendy's going to stay. But hello, good evening. Welcome to Fighting Crime. You're live on air.
Good evening.
Hey, how are you?
Not bad.
All right. You're listening to your radio. Listen to the telephone and go ahead with your contribution, please.
Okay. I want to say that sometimes you have some children in the community and they get very rude and things, but you can't mind them. See, so why call them? Because someone say about the football boots. I don't think that helping a child with a pair of football boots to stop it from going, from being a footballer. You know, some of the children are very rude, but you can't mind them.
But you can't play football properly without the proper gear? They can't go on the field?
Yes, but it would be no problem to give a child, that's what I'm saying, to give a child a pair of football boots and some gear. I think I know how I would help one.
Mm-hmm.
But don't mind the children rude. You may go and complain for a child, and then they behave bad, and then the parent get stupid, and then you turn your mind against the child, but you don't do it, so you still got to help the child and forgive the child.
Mm-hmm. All right, I get where you're coming from. Thank you.
If I even carry out a sponsor walk sheet, I'm going to the neighborhood, somebody else will see that I really know you can get Tom a pair of football boots,
mm-hmm.
a shirt, and a pants, and then other people are going to chip in, and he will become thing.
Right. So never mind the attitudes of some of the children and some of the parents. You still got to lend a helping hand.
Help
I get where
child.
You're coming from.
Help
All right.
The child. Help
thank,
the child.
Thank you so much for your contribution. Tell here. All right. Well, we have Wendy still on the line, I believe. Wendy, did you hear our caller's contribution just now?
Yes. I understand what she's saying. She's trying to say that certain things shouldn't limit people, but mm-hmm. we also have to understand, again, so if I see this opportunity to be involved in crime, and I'm making $300 from this one thing, well, forget that football thing because I ain't getting more money here.
Mm-hmm.
And my mindset is now focused on just getting money, hustling, mm-hmm. and making it. Because you don't want to be the baddest in your game. You're putting all that potential that you could have probably put over there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, again, we have to focus on the younger children, shifting that image, that representation in front of them, and showing them there's more to life.
Mm-hmm.
You might bite this cake, but then when you go in, you see, it's really good. There's more. So again, as I say, legislation is important, community activism. We are responsible for going back. That's the source. If we got to start relying on the government, it is our community.
Yeah, indeed, Mandy.
Yeah.
Indeed, for sure. And that's the importance where we need more activities in the community. And that's where we'll go over to Kiffin. I think we have another caller on the line, but we'll go to Kiffin first. Kiffin, what further community interventions you think there's needed to help with this crime situation? We talked on sports, we talked on technology, but what further community interventions is needed?
There's so much can be done, but as I say, a lot of people now migrate. One of the biggest problems is that people now obtain housing, leave where they come from, forget where they come from. So nobody, the persons that been there before and know, got an idea of certain things, don't look back. You know, I think that's one of the reasons too, that a lot of, you don't see world tennis playing no more. You don't see Four Square. You don't see no kind of games playing in the streets anymore. And
what is Four Square?
Four Square is a square that is divided in four, where you got the king serves the ball,
right.
You got to hit the ball. Mm. If you hit out the ball, or hit the ball up on a person, then the person becomes out. So you try to get to the king.
You got so many people listening beat right now, Four Square.
Four Square. That? Anybody from Greens, mm-hmm. that's where you originate from. Anybody mm-hmm. from Greens, St. George, will know what I'm speaking about. That was a game we played years ago in Wraith Road. That was a big game. Everybody used to look forward to playing Four Square.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people moving out of the community and then giving back and helping the youth. I think that's one of the biggest problems.
It's true.
That causing never a lot of youth to just,
learn.
Yes. Causing the youth to die off.
Each one needs to teach one like this.
Yes, yes. And as I say, it takes a community to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we forget, we turn a blind eye on things because we don't want to offend people. But in life I believe in offending people if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people turn a blind eye and gone here, gone there, gone everywhere. You know, so giving back.
Yeah, we have another caller on the line.
We do? All right, let's go over good to the night. Phone lines. Good night. Welcome to the show. Hello, you're live on air.
Yes. Playing in the streets. The streets now are not the years gone, but everybody now owns a motor car.
Mm-hmm.
And to play in the streets is not as safe as one time. We're both paying jobs to the cars and all these kind of things. You know, you got to consider it's not like one time.
Oh, I got you. Thank you so much for that. It's not like before where you could just go and play in the streets and that sort of thing. But we got community centers, we got pastures, all about the place. But my question is, we invest in all this stuff. Let's say we make sporting gear available to everybody, every community and everything. I don't think until a man or a lady sees that she can actually make money from this and make a living off of it, nobody ain't gravitating towards that though, because like lots of people play football here, but on the side they gotta go and hustle every day and go to work. Football is a part-time thing. Cricket for a lot of people is just something you do on a Saturday. They don't make any money from it, they just do it because they love it. So until we have like proper established leagues where everybody can actually make a living from it, I think we'll always be in that same situation.
For sure. And that's where investment into where the importance of a diversified economy is. We can't mm-hmm. just depend solely on tourism, and COVID would have taught us that, the importance
it
of that.
Should have, for sure. But
I have a message here on my WhatsApp. Somebody says, stop expelling the students because they'll end up on the blocks and in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
That's going back to the first point we made. But I think we have another caller on the line. We have a lot of calls tonight, Scott.
Interesting. I like it. I love it. Good evening. Welcome to Fighting Crime. You're live on air. Hello. Good night. Are you listening?
Hey, good night.
Hey, what's up?
Right. I was listening to what some of the callers were saying a little earlier. But my contribution is, I think that we as adults have to look at dealing with these issues from the primary level. For example, like how children deal with things such as like bullying and conflict resolution and things like that.
Right. Very true. It starts early and we need to start early.
Caller, by any chance, are you a teacher in the primary school system?
Yes, I'm a teacher in the primary school system.
Okay. What trends are you seeing in the primary school, especially with related to violent behavior and that behavior showing from such a young age? Are you seeing it? Is there any trends you're finding?
Well, the school employed that, I would really say it is a trend, but at some points and times you will see various aspects of it coming out, but or not really enough to say that it's a trend. You understand? So from doing all of that, if you get the parents and everything involved, like from that sort of way, we could try to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Do you, Trey, what sort of outreach programs do you have with the parents or geared towards the parents when you see children displaying certain behavior, and what is the parents' response to those programs?
Well, some of the parents would say things like, we should flog them, but you know what, that is prohibited. And then some now will obviously listen and act upon the advice.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the advice you would give is like, you could say, well, you could take away the tablet, you could take away the play time, let them spend some time reading, you know, doing the tables, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You made a point there, right? And before the show I posted something on my Instagram just to get the feedback from the public, right? And you know, it's often here, the especially the older generation, the grandparents, mm-hmm. the children don't get beat no more that way, just get so much trouble. You hear that too, Scott?
All the time.
So do you believe, there's a question I put out to everybody. Do y'all believe, since corporal punishment has been removed from the schools,
that things have gotten worse?
Things have gotten worse. You know, that's a perception on the ground.
Yeah.
That's what people believe.
To me, that is highly debatable. Because on one hand, I could say, I used to get a lot of licks when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I used to get a lot of licks.
You was a troublesome child.
Yeah. I used to
turn
get a
teacher.
Lot of
oh, my.
Right. Yeah, but I also grew up in the church.
Okay.
Right? So I think the church to play a role too, because you know they say charity begins at home.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I don't really know, but I think my personal opinion is, if a child steps out of line, you can warn them through talking. You could take away certain privileges, and if those two don't work, you know they say spoil the rod, your spirit.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Sorry, right. Something like that. You understand? So I believe in corporal punishment.
Let's take a quick poll, Tahir. 266-4862. WhatsApp us, yes or no. Do you believe that since the removal of corporal punishment from schools, things have gotten worse in terms of behavior and children? 266-4862, yes or no. Quick poll.
Shane, you get enough licks as a child, or what was your opinion there, Shane?
Boy, you don't feel a boy that more lit than me. But to be honest, I don't think that corporal punishment or that licks. I guess maybe it does minor, but like the caller just said, growing up in the church and those different things is what really matters. Like licks, though, I know a lot of people that never get licks at school, but you still get the most trouble just because they're smart about it. That's like the same thing. Like in primary school and secondary school, it's corporal punishment. On the streets, it's legislation. And it's the same thing. So if people can hide and do things, then I don't think it's really matter.
And do y'all feel some parents deny, put their head in the sand, that the children are troublesome? Because, you know, there's another perception out there when someone is involved in it. I would throw this question to Kevin, that they say, oh, my son ain't like that, my daughter ain't like that, he never do nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Not here.
He used to help the people in the community. You know, I see a meme the other day with that. But Kevin, do you think some parents and some communities bury their head in the sand?
Tyre, I don't think some, a lot. And I ain't fooling myself, and I ain't gonna fool you. A lot of persons I've come across from primary school, secondary school, you complain, oh, not he don't do, you know, till he find. Start small and big, find yourself someplace that you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a lot of parents, and parents are to be blamed sometimes for the way kids behave. And when you see some of the young little kids now, you see, especially now it's summer, you see some of the little girls look like women.
It's true.
Hair braided. Nothing, don't get me wrong, nothing wrong with, but it's the way, I can remember years ago, it was just bees and fall paper at the end, but you know that this is changing times. So it can, back in the 90s, when I was a little boy, I can't say what happened in the 90s now can happen in 2021,
right?
Because this is changing times. I gotta live with the changing times. But I still believe some of what I'm seeing. Back in the day, my grandmother would say womanish. You know, seeing some little girls look womanish, seeing some little. And I hate to hear this thing, but my little man, my son,
right?
I don't like this concept of my little man. That just eat me up when I hear that.
I think what we're hitting at too is a need for a family program too in our country. Some sort of family initiative to train families, what role the family has to play in solving it. And we talked on a father's program, a men's program, on the previous show, which I hosted, where Mosiah mentioned that the importance of fathers learning. But I think we have another call on the line. We're having a lot of calls tonight for sure. It's good to get the engagement of the public. I really love this. It's very important because we could come here and talk, but we want to hear what the public has to say on crime and violence in Barbados, the solutions most importantly. Good night. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good night. I'm really enjoying the conversation so far, and I'm agreeing with a lot of the points being made. So I'm calling as part of You Report Barbados, and these are the type of conversations that we're having on the platform because this is what young people are talking about across social media. And one of the things that You Report does is it bridges the gap between young people and what we're seeing and policymakers and decision makers. So it's a way to continue conversations like these. I mean, I heard you just now, Toya, throw a question around what people think about corporal punishment. And that's great conversation starters. But what happens after the conversation? What happens when we go to policymakers and say, this is what young people are saying? They're going to ask, where's the proof? Where's the proof? Where's the data that shows us this is what the majority of young people say, and that's what Your Report is bringing to the table? We have a poll right now on crime and violence, and we have some very interesting statistics. So to better understand, Your Reporters are people between the ages of 13 to 29. So we have young people who complete polls on a monthly basis. And one of the hot topics that we're looking at, one of the key issues, is youth involvement in crime and violence. And two of the most important factors that youth have said results in youth involvement in crime and violence is, one, the lack of employment and job opportunities, and two, poor parental guidance. So the reason why we're asking these questions is because we realize there is a generation gap. You know, young people are saying continuously, this is what we feel, this is what we want. But then the older generation is saying, no, this is what it is. This is what you should be feeling. This is how it was in my day. So now what we're doing is actually bringing data to back up the things that we're saying.
Okay.
And you mentioned corporal punishment. One of the least important factors that youth have said is in youth involvement in crime and violence is corporal punishment. They said that is almost like a non-factor. So almost 45% of young people who responded to this poll said it was a non-factor for them. And 64% said music and violent video games is not a reason for youth involvement in violence.
So 64% you said?
Yes. Whoa. Yes. So, you know, these are
what were the statistics for the parental guidance and the lack of opportunities? What were the numbers there?
Right. So for lack of employment and job opportunities, it came in at 30%, and poor parental guidance came in at 27%, and the other options were negligible. So these are important to consider, I think, in how we're thinking about the root causes of the issues. And we want more young people to contribute to this conversation and complete the poll, because this poll goes directly to the hands of the Ministry of Youth. It goes to places like UNICEF and policymakers. That's what Your Report does, influence policy based on the actual opinions of youth across Barbados.
So how can someone contribute? Just go on yourreport.com. What's the website, or yes, where do we go?
It's very simple. All you have to do is add our WhatsApp number, 832-6775, and message us the word crime. Mm-hmm. And once you message that word crime, the poll questions are going to come up, and the public can see the results in real time. So if you follow us on Instagram at YouReportBarbados and you click the link in our bio, it will take you to our website and you will be able to see what youth across Barbados are saying on the questions that I've stated already and many other questions, including what can the Ministry of Youth do, what can youth ourselves do to make Barbados safer.
Nice. And you get a lot of engagement?
Yes. So we have over 200 YouReporters currently, and this is only, YouReport has only been actively signing up YouReporters for the past 3 months. Wow. We have over 200 YouReporters, but we've launched this poll for the month of August and September, and we've collected just over 50 responses thus far. So we want more persons filling out the poll, mm-hmm. more young people coming up and using our voice, because this is how we're going to impact meaningful change.
All right, you heard that number, guys, 832-6775. And all you have to do is message the word crime via WhatsApp, and you're good to go from there, correct?
Yes, please.
Follow the social medias. But thank you for your contribution. It was very, very valuable. Mm-hmm. We have a short 6 minutes left. But Shin, in 1 minute, because we have another question after this. Do you think there's a need for more public dialogue on fighting crime, especially at a national level in Barbados?
Yes, I do. And I think that the conversation has to be surrounded around providing funds in these depressed communities. We touch on sports, we touch on technology, but one thing that we left out was culture and entertainment and that kind of stuff. That's in true. Barbados. You know? Krakova is a big festival. Like we have a lot of untapped talent in these depressed communities. So that once we attack the core, like the young gentleman said at the beginning of the show in the interview, once we attack these depressed communities and really and truly take crime as something serious, then we could really start to fight crime. And at the public and national level, it is not only government that we need to have to be more involved, but also the private sector and the communities as well, because it needs to be it can be upon fighting. All hands need to be on deck and fighting this battle, because you know what? Crime affects each and every Barbadian. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks bad when we go on the internet and we type in Barbados and we see your man get murdered. Like, them kind of things look bad. So it does not affect one Barbadian, it affects everyone. So that's my take on it.
I think we have an issue in Barbados where we just turn a blind eye. We say, that's government job. And mm-hmm. in my last show, in my closing, I made mention to that. We can't depend on government. We can't depend on the schools. We have to take charge and take responsibility. I can go over to Kiffin. I got this some letters from death row inmates from back in the 80s when Matt Fingal used to carry students to the prison. And in the interview, the guy mentioned that these stories need to be told. A lot of these stories need to be told. How do you think these stories of persons within prison, within that have done crime, can be told, that can inspire and change the mindset of persons that will be looking to go into crime? Scott, how you think the stories can be told by persons?
I'm not sure if stuff like that would have a major impact in terms of changing someone's mindset, but I do believe that having stuff like that available, and maybe even the same prison tours, that would definitely be impactful, because some people seem to think that I would just go and do this or do that mm-hmm. and go up the road and sit down for you. People say that all the time. So maybe we need to start taking them up the road and let them see, well, this is what up the road is like. Okay. I'm pretty sure you don't want to come up here and experience this. You understand what I mean? I don't know if that happens currently. I do know there were some or a few secondary schools that had programs that did that. I don't know if it's commonplace throughout all.
Okay.
But that could definitely be a big turning point for some people, for real, to actually see what that life is like and know, well, if I go down this road, I can end up here, and I don't want to end up here, so let me make a change. You understand?
Right, right. Kiffin, we have 2 minutes left. Closing, any closing remarks?
I just want to say, and I don't want to leave this program unless there's a guy by the name of Ronaldo White and David Lovell and them guys who are putting together, building houses and putting together and helping persons that live in St. John, especially to get work and such like. And I want to give a big shout out to those guys. You know, housing is one of the biggest problems too, and it starts with the youth overcrowding and such like. But I want to give a big shout out to these guys, you know, for putting together and helping persons in St. John to live a crime-free life and get a day of work. Yeah. You know, where they can come and do some mason work.
Opportunity.
Job. Yeah. So I want to say a big shout out to Renato White. I hope he's listening. He's the managing director of Caribbean Housing Solution, and yeah, also David Lovell. Right. Those guys are doing a fantastic job.
Big up to those two for sure.
Big up to those guys. Also, Daly.
Yeah.
You know, I want to big up traders, especially that are. When I saw that project, you know, for St. John, it makes my heart feels good to see that person still care, you know, and put together a package so that those
Shane,
guys could get some.
Any closing remarks before we go? Quickly.
Yeah, in closing, I'd just like to say that we need to have increased government participation in trying to fight crime. We want to thank the government what they've been doing so far. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you Kiffin.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Scott. Here.
And I just want to thank everyone from Starcom for having me as a co-host. This is the final show. Hopefully not the last on air. But Tahir is off air now.
Oh, and the answer to our question was a resounding yes. Apparently everybody thinks that the removal of corporal punishment has encouraged bad behavior.
Oh my. We can have a discussion on that perhaps, Dennis. That could be your next topic on Brass Stats.
All right, good night. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you so much for messaging. This has been Fighting Crime, discussing solutions to crime and violence. I'm your host, Scott LaRocque, and catch you next time.